When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I feel mentally exhausted after that weekend of rugby, but should we just spend another hour talking about some rugby, boys?
No, I'm miserable. This is the last place on earth that I want to be.
which gets you down more, being beaten again for Broughton Park or Wales coming so close but losing out to South Africa?
I've got to say, it's Broughton Park. It's I don't know. It's a mixture of the two, isn't it? It's like a cocktail of painkillers and alcohol.
Boys, we're getting into the chat before we've even heard the theme tune. So hands in, pod on three. 1, 2, 3. Pod. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and we love the game of rugby, but we don't take it or ourselves too seriously. But how can you not take this weekend's rugby seriously? Best World Cup ever.
Agreed.
Wow.
Indisputable now, isn't it?
Beyond any reasonable doubt, no court of law could defend the notion that this is not the best World Cup ever.
Even if the Samoan judicial defence team was arguing for it.
I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
That is Phil.
Hi, Tim.
We have gorged ourselves on Premiership rugby, World Cup rugby, of course. And did anyone catch any Pro 12 rugby?
I'm sorry, serious question. No, none.
I saw that Ulster lost. Unfortunately, I wasn't watching the game. Well, fortunately, I wasn't watching the game.
Well, that's fine. I think most people's eyes were on the Rugby World Cup. And just to give you a bit of context, as we record this, it is now 10-7. We've had about an hour to digest Scotland's defeat, which was the final quarter-final, and I think that's where we should start.
Because it's fresh in the mind, isn't it?
In fact, before we start, I think we should all go round the room. I think we've got some apologies to our listeners. I want to apologise to anybody Scottish for the flippant way that I wrote off Scotland's chances against Australia in the World Cup quarter-final.
Well, you did say they would lose. You were correct.
This is correct.
You were vindicated.
Yeah, I was correct. I was correct, at least. Do you want to apologise for anything, JB, from the last podcast?
Yeah, I'd like to apologise to Worcester. I'd like to apologise to Harlequins in particular. I thought we were going to lose by 20 points. I'd like to apologise to Gloucester. I'd like to then apologise to South Africa. I'd like to apologise to Schalkberger. I'd probably like to apologise to Argentina. I'd like to apologise also to... Hang on, have I got everyone?
You also do have an apology to make to Julian Surveyor. Not from the last pod.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a long-running gag that you say that Julian Surveyor
isn't very good.
Not very good.
I've never seen Julian Surveyor play like apparently Julian Surveyor should play like. Because every time I watch him, he's casually strolling over a try line and putting the ball down. I've never seen him play well. So, sorry, Julian Surveyor.
So pretty much, if you listen to the last podcast, you need to pretty much ignore.
You could redo it, you know.
The vast majority of what JB said.
redo
we should,
it.
We should re-edit the podcast and just take you out of it.
Because of the
take me. I also agreed with Jay that Schalkberger might be past it, and that was one of the most impressive back row performances I've seen in a long, long time. It was absolutely superb.
I would just say this, because of the excellent Acast app, it is a genuine possibility that we can go into the system, re-edit our picks and just post them back up again.
You can listen on the Acast app if you download that. You can listen on iTunes as well, and I recommend that you subscribe and we'll get every episode of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast delivered straight to you. We've had loads of people getting in touch, and at Rugby Podcast is one way you can get in touch on Twitter if you tweet, or tim@eggchasers.com if you email, and we'll all have a good old read of that and share some of yours. Like this from Zippy Chuck on Twitter, who's tweeted to @RugbyPodcast and just said, "It's only right, isn't it, that the team with the best stash win? Well done, Argentina." I do love that kit.
It's lovely, isn't
it's
it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping they'd go out just so it might be discounted on an online retailer.
Although there's something about Ireland's kit. The Irish players either have the biggest pecs in world rugby, or the kit that Canterbury have made for them particularly emphasises their pecs. Pecs appeal from Ireland.
I think it's a bit of both. I think bar Sexton and Toner, they're in great shape. That's set of lads.
Toner's a weird looking chap, isn't he?
They're like a scaled down version of the same body type.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the boys do look good in that lovely kit.
They do. But onto the rugby itself, and like I said, I think we should start with Scotland. It's freshest in the mind. I mean, firstly, what an incredible spectacle. What a game.
Game of the weekend, and it was the fourth of four spectacular game.
It feels like it's kind of just, it's like, it feels like there was four spectacles, each uniquely brilliant in their own way.
Yeah, each one so different, but so entertaining. For me, it was just because Scotland completely stunned me.
It was like a Japan game again. It was Japan, South Africa.
It was, and with 2 minutes to go, it was the identical scoreline.
Mm.
It was 34-32 to the underdog. And I was thinking, this is just a repeat of Japan. And for that, I loved it.
I do wonder if kind of Scotland have taught us a bit of a lesson, because I'm a huge advocate of the Welsh way of playing, which is kick the ball, back your D, and see if you can win, which actually turns out to be incredibly high risk, because if you can't win, or if you keep it close and you're playing against world-class players, only needs a second and it's gone. But Scotland got the ball in their hands and they played.
Yeah, and what I would say is, if there was one team in world rugby that you want to offer a little bit more than just kicking for territory and then doing what Wales did, which was hitting one-out runners all afternoon long, I would say it's South Africa. That's like, oh, cheers, Wales. Thanks very much. That's perfect.
I disagree. I disagree wholeheartedly. I thought it worked except for one small problem. South Africa have two world-class players, and world-class players over the course of 80 minutes will do something world-class, and that's all it was. But I thought the plan was working to perfection. Problem is, it's a very high-risk plan.
Yeah, well, Wales conceded so much territory and possession.
Well, they're not bothered. They're just not bothered.
They are now, because they're out of the tournament.
Yeah, but they don't have any other way to play. There isn't another. They don't have another option.
Well, is that a weakness in the coaching? By your reckoning, they only have one way of playing. If that was Stuart Lancaster only having one way of playing, I think you'd absolutely rip him to shreds for it.
No, because I believe the one way of playing is the best option for Wales. They could have gone wide over and over again, but then they would have lost by a damn sight more. They have got the perfect way of playing for the individuals that they have got.
I do agree with that, but that does in some way show the limitation of the players that are available to Wales.
Quite possibly.
But Gatland is arguably getting the best out of them.
Yeah, I still think he's the best coach in the world.
But I don't know, Vern Cotter's putting his hand up, because talk about limitations, then Scotland, you can get your little violin out as much as you want about Wales. Scotland have got it even harder.
Yes.
The way that they stretched Australia and the intensity, that they brought for... Stop calling him Fern Cotton.
Fern Cotton? I call him Fern. Now, Fern Cotton's done exactly the same as Gatland. done exactly the same as Gatland, which is he's looked at all his pieces. They don't have a working pack as, say, Wales have, but they've got these lightning-quick backs, and probably they've got a very creative 10. So that's the way that they play. He just plays to the best of his team's ability, and that's all it is.
I agree with that to an extent. In like the strength of Scotland is Hogg, Maitland, Seymour, and co. But Hooper, I think, got one turnover penalty in that match.
Yeah.
And Cowan, Denton was massive, and their back row were absolutely immense.
They were, and the Scotland scrum. Won several penalties against Australia, which no other team has done.
And they really destroyed the loose head. Yes. Sio.
Sio, yeah.
Sio went down hard.
WPNL had a great game as tight head. But on the rooks, Scotland won 58 out of 60 rooks, which is is exceptionally high.
Against Australia.
Particularly against Australia. Yeah. Australia are a different team when they have Pooper playing in tandem.
It did feel, though, to me, that they were on the back foot a lot of the game. Like, they were scrapping to stay in it. And then when they got their opportunities, that's when they took them. They seemed to be a lot more efficient, if that makes sense. Well, as efficient as you can be with the, like, kick charge down.
Mm. Well, yeah, they did have a bit of luck. There was the intercept and the kick charge down, which was sloppy play by Australia, but also
you've got to be there, you've got to work hard,
and it was partly the pressure that Scotland were putting them under. I was devastated when they lost.
I was angry as well for another one. And you know what? I think we should firstly agree that it was an amazing game of rugby. Lots of endeavour by both teams. Five tries for Australia, was it? Three or four for Scotland?
Three
for Scotland. And just a brilliant game of rugby. Heartbreaking defeat at the end. But let's reset the context. Scotland have just scored that intercept try.
Yep.
What Slipper was doing at 10, trying to ship a ball, a loopy, horrible pass to a centre, I don't know what Australia were thinking. They got punished rightly, and Scotland were in front. Let's get this. Scotland should have looked after the ball on the restart. They didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Scotland should have won the line out when they had a line out. They didn't. Scotland shouldn't have messed about with the ball. They should have looked after it. They didn't. So there was lots in their control. But then the penalty that Bernard Foley slotted to win Australia the game looked like it was a knock-on off Finn Russell, which then their prop caught, and as a result, it was offside penalty. When you actually look at the replay, it was Bernard Foley that knocked that ball, not Finn Russell.
Wasn't it Fibs?
Sorry, Fibs.
But it was an Australian.
I didn't notice that even on the replays. I didn't see it.
Well, and here's what's interesting, because I think Craig Joubert did notice that on the replay, because he was looking at the screen. There was a big reaction from the crowd. The commentary team were like, oh, I wonder, was that... Anyway, he didn't check it or didn't look after it. And then at the final whistle, and this is the bit I found really distasteful, he bolted and ran off the pitch.
I hope he did bolt off the pitch, because he's not a very nice human. And he didn't want to shake hands, because I'd hate to think it was for some other reason. You know, like someone's giving him a bit of grief or that kind of thing. You know, like, do you want to see football referees getting off the field quick?
Because they're being intimidated.
Because they're being intimidated and harassed. I mean, I didn't see any of that. I didn't even see him running off, so I'm in no real place to comment. I'm just saying, I hope it was because he's not a particularly good guy, rather than, you know, there's any kind of intimidation factor.
I can't imagine there would have been any intimidation.
No, I think
he realised he got the that wrong.
They're so unrugby-like, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's what I find really distasteful about it. You shake the captain's hands. Then, if Scotland had have got round him and got in his face, we'd have been saying, that was not rugby, you have to take defeat
better than that. Exactly.
But him running off the pitch was, I'll say, it was an absolute disgrace.
And
it's weird.
Do you see the post-match interview with Laidlaw? An absolutely distraught Laidlaw. He couldn't understand why he didn't go to the TMO for such an important decision, given how many times he'd gone to the TMO previously. Didn't make sense. When there's 1 minute on the clock, so it doesn't matter how long it takes, you just want the right decision.
The TMO thing's getting out of hand.
I think
judicious approach to rugby is getting out of hand. You know, everything about the game of rugby, which I absolutely love, is slowly being, very slowly, very grudgingly getting eroded. I hate it. I really hate it.
I have got no problem at all with this judicial approach and the TMO, because ultimately I want the correct decisions, which is why it's even more frustrating when you could use it and you don't.
How can you get the correct decision, Phil, when it's a case, for instance, like the Maitland deliberate knock-on? What is that? I mean, you've got to look at the context in the game, and you can't say, oh, well, the hand went forward, the ball went down. Well, how do you feel about it? It's kind of a feeling thing. I don't feel that was... I think that's just a knock-on.
Yeah.
Scrum. That's it.
I agree.
I think we
all agree the Maitland was knock-on.
Yeah.
Penalty at worst, if you really want to push it, but to call it a yellow card, I don't agree. And I can't imagine how I'd feel if I was Scottish right now. One of the Scottish players. Oh, my goodness. I mean...
You'd feel broadly the same as if you're Welsh.
Yeah.
Very, very similar.
Very similar. Very similar.
Yeah, similar, but not. It wasn't stolen from you. Yeah. You wouldn't have that same feeling of injustice.
I would have more. I'd feel. Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the bad call. I'd feel the injustice over the yellow card. I mean, that's the worst one for me by far.
Feel it over both. I think both those things did have a material effect
on the plus
Scotland
side, though.
That game.
Who would have ever thought that Scotland, of all the home nations, would be the most dangerous out wide?
I know.
When you think about like all the players that we were banging on about prior to the World Cup, the dangerous ones, Liam Williams, Mike Brown.
Now, on the TMO thing, because I think this will get talked about a lot, Rugby World magazine were very, very quick to bob out a tweet on the final whistle, obviously picking up on everything, all the people saying, much like me and Phil were, which was, for goodness sake, if there's a time to use a TMO, use it there to make sure you get the right decision. and Rugby World came out and said, look, a TMO can't be used to determine if a penalty should or shouldn't be given, only for offences in a build-up to a try, foul play or scoring of a try. I would like to, and there's a lot of people saying this, that it can't be, and TMOs can't be used to work out if something's a penalty or not. However, I would actually refer Rugby World, who are now saying that, to their own article a couple of years ago about when TMOs can be used, when they highlight the fact that this one, referee consulting with others, at 6.A.6. The referee may consult with assistant referees in regards to matters relating to their duties, the law relating to foul play or timekeeping, and may request assistance related to other aspects of the referee's duties, including the adjudication of offside. So pretty much, you can use the help that's on offer
whenever you want.
Whenever you want.
Yeah, including the adjudication of offside, and this was an adjudication of offside.
And by the way, what do you think would happen if the law stated you can't do that? Do you think that the TMO would just cut off Joubert, just hang up on him? Or, you know, the line judges just turn their backs? What would be...
Sorry, Craig, it's outside my jurisdiction.
Yeah, the TMO's not going to say, yeah, well, no, it wasn't offside, it was off an Australian hand, but you're going to have to stick with your original decision. and if it was the other way round, if that had actually happened, and what's worse, on the one hand going, why didn't he use the TMO? That would have cleared up the decision. The opposite side would have been, he incorrectly used the TMO to get the correct result.
Yes.
Yeah.
The important thing is getting the correct result.
Exactly.
See, I think, right, we need to move away from this judicial approach and everything that's got to be categorised and pigeonholed and all the rest of it, and go to like a principle-based thing, which is like, okay, unsafe play should be penalised, which is a very broad statement, but then has to be held in context of what we're actually doing here. And that's not childcare, and it's not going down the shops, it's strapping on boots and hitting each other with shoulders. And it's got to be judged in that sort of context.
And maybe, so we can just focus on the rugby and leave the refereeing aside, let's pick up on exactly that, JB, because I think that links in probably, and what's maybe motivated that is the yellow card that Nigel Owens, who is a referee everybody loves and will probably referee the World Cup final, and maybe he's only following out the laws that he's been given to do, but the yellow card that he gave to...
Pick-a-moles.
Hero Pick-a-moles.
Oh my word! I mean, as far as that is not the game I love, right there.
No,
Louis Pick-a-moles getting a yellow card. That's not the game that we love.
Do you know, I can't remember what he got a yellow card for. What did he get a yellow card for?
When you were listening to it, it was McCaw on the floor and
cheating.
Yeah, McCaw in at the side,
cheating at the breakdown, killing.
Then
Ireland's
hands
ball.
On, not releasing. France want to take a quick penalty, so Pick-a-moles is rightly upset about this. And it was a push while he's on the floor, and there was contact with a closed fist in his face, but it wasn't a punch. But Nigel Owens actually went through the same decision-making process as we went through.
Yeah.
And he said, it's not a punch, it's just a fist in the face, which does sound quite bad when you say it like that, but having seen the images, he brushed his
handbags.
Cheek with it. Yeah, he brushed
his
cheek.
We would have called that handbags, get on.
Yeah.
Get on with
he
it.
He went through that logical decision-making process, and still came out with yellow card.
I know this is a horribly untrendy thought to have, but I would like to say all, unless it's absolutely obvious a violent act has occurred. So right in front of the referee, someone winds up, blindsides another guy, out cold. Okay, going to be a red card. But for other kind of semi-violent offences, I don't really want the referee going to the TMO and looking at them. I want them to go to a panel after the match, because part of the joy of rugby is pulling up your socks and just getting on with it. That is what I love about it. It breeds good people. And yes,
no,
I want people to get intimidated. See, I want this to happen.
No, you see, I draw a line with that. Like, imagine I'm Nigel Owens, right? So I've just seen that on the TMO. Okay, Richie, you are bang out of order at that breakdown. What do you expect? Back you go.
That's it. Yes. I would love that. That's perfect.
That is exactly how it should have been.
Sorry, Nigel, for the bad impression.
Yeah. That's exactly what should have happened. But
McCaw, all game, he was getting away with so much.
Yeah,
the number of times he joined the ruck from the side, was playing with it on the floor, was just lying there, stopping the French
ball.
And
this move against violence must be removed, is wrong. Because what it actually promotes is it promotes gamesmanship, sneakiness, you know, vipers. Or like, for instance, Pascal Pape was doing something illegal and sneaky, and he got exactly what he deserved, which wasn't even a punch.
And there was a moment, Devin Toner did a high tackle on Nicolas Sanchez, And if you look at the replay of it, it was a high tackle, it was a penalty. Yeah. Nicolas Sanchez did a big football, like, oh, ref, like arms in the air, face screwed up, screaming, like, I'm playing for a yellow card. It just, we've said it. You listen to the podcast over the last couple of years, and JB's probably said it more than me and Phil, but we've all said it.
Hear me now, believe me
later.
We've
all said it. We have got to stop this slide towards football, because we can deny that it's happening as much as you want, but it is happening, and it's happening with little tiny baby steps, but it's happening.
I'm the opposite of Jay. I actually think the processes they've got in place are the right ones, but I think even with those processes, people are making incorrect decisions, like the pick-em-alls, like the slap down. Those two yellow cards shouldn't have been yellow cards, but they were right to go to the TMO.
Yeah.
But they got the wrong decision. Yeah. So it's so frustrating that they're so close to being, to get it all spot on, but they still managed to mess it up.
Right. We spent a long time talking about refereeing. There was so much amazing rugby to talk about.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Tim, because this opening, however many minutes, 20 minutes, is probably sound very negative, but it was such a good weekend. It was brilliant.
I keep every game I was watching, with the exception of the New Zealand game, to me was game of the tournament.
Yeah.
So Wales was game of the tournament, and then another game happened, and then
Argentina
was game of the tournament, and then Australia was game of the tournament.
You're forgetting about Japan, South Africa.
Because that was game of the tournament too.
Japan, still the only Northern Hemisphere team to beat a Southern Hemisphere team in the World Cup.
Quite incredible. Yeah, so Ireland, I kind of feel a little sorry for them, but not as sorry as I am impressed over Argentina. I mean, they and Scotland in some ways are quite similar, as in how attacking they are out wide.
Yeah. I've been saying it for a long time. That back three of Argentina,
you
is
have right,
unbelievable.
Phil, back about a year ago. Believe him now.
That will definitely catch on. it made me laugh.
Thing is, the number of things you say, "Hear me now, believe me later," about some of them are going to be right. Phil, though, is very, very small in the number of things he goes on about. But one of the things about was how good Argentina's attacking play is, particularly their back three.
On the big issues, I always get it right. So, it made me laugh that the fullback is Imhoff. Fullback.
Tukele. Imhoff, the winger. Yeah, who scored two tries. Yeah.
Is it Joaquin or
Joaquin Tukele?
Joaquin Tukele
was released by Cardiff Blues. Oh, how I laugh.
Was not used very much by Sale Sharks.
Yeah.
Was he there as well?
He was at Sale Sharks.
Tell you what, that doesn't bode well for England when Diamond's head coach. anyway.
Well, nor does their result against Saracens, but maybe we'll have time to touch on that a bit later.
I say that he was released by Cardiff Blues. Apparently, he had to be released by Cardiff Blues to go to the franchise over to in the franchise in Argentina. But let's not let the facts get in the way of a good laugh.
Look, that is a frightening prospect that most of that Argentina squad are going to be playing for the Super Rugby franchise. Like, well, I mean, think what they've learned from the Rugby Championship. If they're going to have a club side playing international rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
That's scary.
Yeah. I mean, Ireland effectively have that in Leinster. it will make the world of difference. Being paid properly, training properly, youth facilities.
Access, so they will be available for the national team all of the time.
Exactly.
Rather than the players in front. The only concern I do have is that the youngsters coming through who might not get blooded as soon as they would otherwise do, because they've got a full international start in 23.
Right, here's a question. I don't think it will happen for financial reasons, but is there an argument that Argentina should get included on a Lions tour?
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
There's not the local club sides to play midweek games against.
But they don't need the local club sides, do they? Because they could land in, say, I don't know, Chicago and have a quick game. No, they could land in Canada.
They could do North America. It could be the Americas, but they play a test series against Argentina midweek. Plays
so
Canada,
like,
and USA. And but the tournament, no trophy, but just play for Malvinas.
Yeah, I said this today. I said, right, we should incentivise the Argentines to win the World Cup by offering them the Falklands. why do you call it Malvinas, you traitor?
Malvinas.
It's not Malvinas, is it? It's the Falklands.
Okay.
The game.
Oh, yeah, what a game.
The start. I was... Because I'm writing another blog for Canterbury for this game. I've not got tickets out of this one, unfortunately. But
you did get yourself a nice England singlet.
I did.
I would have asked for more, a lot more.
But it was I enjoyed your last one. I'm looking forward to reading this blog.
It won't be as good because I've not had a full day out. But I've been doing a lot of research into this game, and I was just thinking, they're well balanced. They've got experienced heads. They've both got solid packs, good decision making halfbacks, and then the way that Argentina started the game, twelve minutes in, and there were 17-0 down, and Tommy Bowe's being stretchered off.
Yeah.
I thought that was it. That game over. But his replacement, Luke Fitzgerald, came on, scored one try, set one up, and Ireland ground their way back into it.
And what do you think about Luke Fitzgerald? I mean, he's suffered a lot of injuries over the last 6 years. But 6 years ago, he was a British and Irish Lion.
Lion,
and
yeah.
A hell of a Lion. He actually started the second test.
Yeah. So with 20 minutes to go, so after 20 minutes, Ireland were out of it. With 20 minutes to go, it was a 3-point game, and then Argentina, in those last 20 minutes, they were incredible.
I suppose if you were going to pick two times to be really good, it would be just after the starting whistle and just before the final whistle.
Yeah. It's 240 minutes. So Ireland were the better team in the middle 40 minutes, and Argentina were the better team in the first and last.
But they were much better than Ireland were better.
They were so clinical.
Madigan actually had another solid game, and I'm pleased.
Did he?
I'm pleased that he's got rid of his high and tight haircut.
I'm glad the hair's
He
gone.
Obviously saw, because there was so much focus on Julian Surveyor, he obviously saw how rubbish that hairstyle is, only worn by hipsters, and it is going to look... It's one of those haircuts that's going to date really badly.
It's going to be like Kevin Keegan with his perm.
Oh, yeah, exactly. People in 20 years are going to look back at rugby players and go, what were that New Zealand 2015 World Cup winning team? What were they thinking? Look how bad their hairstyles are. But yes. Yeah, Madigan got rid of his. I mean, Ireland will have no complaints. They stuck in, but they didn't have enough to beat Argentina.
I don't think if you had all of their players, they would have beaten Argentina.
Oh well, you look at who they've lost. So Argentina have lost a few players. There's two tight head props down. They've lost Galarza,
in the second row,
and they've lost Bosch.
Yeah.
So Ireland have lost four players as well, but it's the experienced decision-making team. So they lost O'Connell, Omani, O'Brien and Sexton, who have between them they have more than 250 international caps.
Is that 20?
It's massive.
And again, O'Brien's only got himself to blame. The other three were injuries. But
yeah.
But is that 20 points difference?
It's a big difference.
So I just think we should just congratulate Argentina because it was brilliant. And I'm beautiful stash, lovely grey V-neck jumpers worn by all the coaching team as well.
Fine knitwear.
We wouldn't mind one of those little Puma grey V-neck jumpers for a round of golfing.
I'd love one of those.
I just think now, I'm not entirely sure if Australia are as good as we think. I know that sounds ridiculous because they've just gone through England.
This is the perfect example of JB. You have total conviction in what you say, but flip-flop. They have one great. They have a couple of good performances.
I said they would beat England. I said that Wales would run them close, which both happened. But then on the evidence of today's game, which was Scotland running them close.
I think you said they were the best team in the World Cup.
On what I'd seen. But when I saw them, they'd played Wales, they'd played England, and All Blacks had only played Argentina to start and then a bunch of nobodies. So relatively, at the time, they were very, very good.
Yeah, okay. You don't make too many relative statements.
Make all relative statements. I keep away from the absolute, then you'll be in trouble.
You did make one absolute last week.
What's that?
And you said that Wales' pack was going to dominate South Africa's pack.
Okay. They did exactly as I thought. They outworked them and they out-tackled them. Was it domination? Well, if they'd have won, you'd have said that the Welsh pack had won the battle. And I think that on balance, it probably still did.
Dominate is definitely the South African pack did win the battle.
If you give the ball back to what we consider one of the nastiest packs in the world over and over again, and you just hammer them into submission over and over again, turn over the ball, kick it back, let them come at you, I think that is a victory. At the end of the day, it was two world-class players doing what world-class players do.
Was it one village idiot who managed to get a place on the wing for Wales just deciding to step in on Vermaelen? We've been criticised about how we say it. We've been saying Vermaelen, which is exactly how Fury de Pruyer, the South African captain, calls him, by the way. So we're going to carry on calling him that if you have a problem, whatever. But
the V-man.
Cuthbert, if you decide to step in on Vermaelen, you have got to nail him and the ball.
But then
you have to. If
Vermaelen tries to pass conventionally, Cuthbert's probably got him. But Vermaelen didn't look where he was passing. He threw a ridiculous offload.
An unbelievable offload.
Yeah. It was an
unbelievable. What are you going to do? You know, it's just one of those things.
Cuthbert shouldn't have stepped in the way he did.
No, but there was the thing. I can't remember exactly what, but the scrum didn't go to plan.
Yeah,
it wasn't
scrum,
going that way.
The back row was further away.
Yeah.
But Vermaelen was half snagged, and there was more than enough time for the back row to get him.
He messed it up, and it cost him the game.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very harsh thing. The best quote about Cuthbert I've heard all World Cup is, the harder he tries, the worse it gets. And I think that's so true.
Yeah, he wasn't great.
Just going on to
Skalkberger, who was man of the match. He was a clear deserved man of the match. He's changed his game so much. Going back to the 2000s.
I've never seen him play like that.
More and more these days, if watching the Rugby Championship, he plays more and more as a distributing seven. He still carries.
Like Robshaw, for instance.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If Robshaw wants to be an international seven or an international back row, he needs, based on his skill set, he needs to watch that performance of Skalkberger, because he was carrying, he was tackling, he was turning over, but his distribution was what made it. And here's a little fact for you on the domination of the Welsh pack. Skalkberger made twice as many metres in hand as the whole Welsh pack.
Wow.
That's
huge.
But there again, stats tell you very little about the game.
That tells you something.
No, it does tell you something. All the stats,
one player getting double the yards of the whole eight men, that tells you a massive amount.
I get it, right? But all he needs to do is look at the stats. Excuse me. Oh, sorry. I'll actually find out.
JB's just getting undressed in the rugby dungeon. By the way, JB, while we've got this natural break and you're getting undressed, what's with the tripod and the camera and the mirror in the rugby dungeon?
Yeah. No, I needed to store my camera somewhere for Broughton Park. The camera's now safely in Broughton Park. Have you turned your...
In the showers.
Oh, yeah. Have you turned your mic on?
Yes, I have. Is that okay?
Yeah. Sorry, when we're talking about stats, they are pretty much useless for predicting a winner. So the stats in Wales, South Africa, reflected exactly how both teams played. One had all of the possession, and the other kicked it away and just tackled. I think Wales missing like three times more tackles than South Africa.
Twice as many.
Are you trying to tell me that? You seem to be saying it went exactly to plan for Wales. Do you think Wales were intending to not have possession of the ball for most of the game?
Pretty much, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think Ireland do it. I think Wales do it. I don't think
it's a hell of a strategy. I don't think they would have liked to give up as much territory as they did, because South Africa did have a lot of ball.
Yeah.
But South Africa, apart from that one moment of magic, they found it very difficult to break that Wales line. So I would have thought Wales would be comfortable, but it's the territory they didn't want to give away, and they did.
I was going to say that strategy is all a territorial based strategy.
Yes.
And so that's about.
Well, it's just risk, isn't it?
We're going to make you run from in your own 22, and we're going to absorb everything you've got.
But what you've got to remember, though, is...
What I'm saying is, Warren Gatland really struggles to beat Southern Hemisphere teams. Is that because that strategy is fundamentally naive against people that have such high skill sets that they can get out of their own 22 if they need to?
I would suggest it is the only strategy that he could employ with the players available to him. But
a Wales player is so much less skillful than Scotland's.
Probably out wide, yeah. Probably in the centres which were available to Wales, and the wingers and the fullback, yeah, probably. And also, when you've got that pack that works so hard, I actually think it's more the Welsh pack is that much better than the Scottish pack.
Mm.
It is a legitimate strategy, but it is high risk, because as soon as one thing goes wrong, you can't chase a game, and you need to be so much fitter than another international team full of world-class professionals.
Like France, what disappoints me about France so much these days, and under Philippe Saint-André, and probably for the best part of a decade now, is that I grew up loving watching France have the kind of ball skills that we watch New Zealand, Australia mm-hmm. with at the moment, and Argentina as well.
Argentina, definitely.
Yeah.
And it also disappoints me, that's what I remember about Wales. Of all the United Kingdom, British and Irish teams, Wales were the ones who grew up with these skills, and where have they gone?
I will say this: Gatland has a saying, and I've said loads of times, which is his team will be the best at the jobs that require no skill. Now, this probably isn't a very fashionable answer, but attacking play requires you have some extremely talented individuals. if you don't have those skills, just don't have those skills.
So, I'm just going to throw it out there. Is this, again, when we talked about it on the last podcast, a global season and summer rugby, are we actually going to get those skills in the Northern Hemisphere until we actually have a seismic change and do something like that?
You look at Argentina, and their skills were absolutely immaculate. France and Argentina both played Ireland in the last week, and France had a couple of opportunities where they had overlaps. They had 2-3-man overlaps, and they drifted, and they didn't straighten up, and their passing was slack and behind the man, and they just blew them. It's very easy to defend. Argentina had similar opportunities, and their skill set from all their players, like Creevy in the line, Fernandez Lobbe.
Whoa.
Yeah, and can we just point out that
they were so good at it.
I know France does get cold and it does rain there, but it's...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It is drier in the south of France, right, than it is in the UK.
Yeah.
And yet they don't seem to have the ball skills which you would assume that they would.
No, they're obsessed with size in France, aren't they?
Yeah. Because the majority of the rugby is played in winter, maybe.
And New Zealand have big players, but I mean, let's get on to New Zealand for a second, because I think
New Zealand have
athleticism.
Well, do you know what? I'm going to have to correct you there, because the New Zealand pack was actually bigger than the French pack by 20 kilograms.
I don't care if they were bigger. What they have is athleticism. They have... they're like Brody Retallick, perfect example. Yeah, he's bigger than the French second rows, but he's a proper athlete with proper ball skills.
Yeah,
can't disagree with that.
Yeah,
Dane Coles. I keep wanting to call him Dane. What's his name from? What the hell's his name from?
Dane Bowers.
Dane Bowers. I keep wanting to say that.
Is there an actor called Dane Cook as well? An annoying.
No,
that rings
Dane Cook is a comedian, I think.
Yeah, comedy. Yeah. Dane Bowers had some involvement in rugby recently, didn't he?
What?
Let's leave this well alone.
Do you not know this, Tim?
You must know this.
I don't know this. What?
He was... do you want to do it?
I don't know all the facts, but...
I don't need to know the facts, so this might be my wheelhouse.
It involved a court case with his girlfriend and...
A caravan. A caravan and Ian Gough.
And Ian Gough, yes.
Ian
Gough. Well,
oh, no, was he involved in that?
It was Ian Gough's a cricketer.
No, that's Darren Gough.
Darren Gough. No, it is Ian Gough.
Yeah.
Is this the one that was actually found to be nothing?
Ian Gough was completely acquitted and...
Found to have done nothing.
He proved to be a great guy.
Yes, yeah, real good lad. Nice Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely Harley Davidson that Jeb Sinclair went naked on. Here we go.
Wow.
I can't hear Dane Bowers anywhere.
I wouldn't worry about it. There you go. I'd literally rather listen to Dane Cook sing.
I can't believe it. Who would have predicted at the start of this podcast that we'd have been playing Victoria Beckham and Dane Bowers?
And actually, Dane Bowers has a legitimate rugby connection. There you go.
He does.
Wow.
Do you know what? The next charity match would be funny. Do you know when they do, like, Rugby the Heroes? If somehow they lure Dane Bowers to play. And on the other side, Ian Gough.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking. Like
Dane, you're going to play 8 and Ian, you're going to play 6.
Brilliant. It'd be good to have Stan Collymore on the Dane Bowers side and the 2003 Bath pack.
Who were the ones that were fighting side? It was a Dublin Burger King, wasn't it?
Stan Collymore and
there was one guy in Bath.
Grucock.
No, it was I tell you who it was.
It's Danny Grucock.
No, it wasn't. It's a South African centre.
No one would take on Danny Grucock.
No, it's a South African centre. And I can't... Who was it?
While we're trying to think about that, we've just been tweeted by Russ. Russ655 on Twitter. He's tweeted at Rugby Podcast just now. And he's just he's taken a picture of Craig Joubert's current Wikipedia page, which I'm sure won't last for long because it currently says, Craig Paul Joubert is a South African professional rugby union referee who hates the Scotland National Rugby Union.
Oh, well, we're going to have to leave this this South African centre and come back to it because I just can't remember.
Right.
Can't remember him. Anyway.
New Zealand. Come on.
Yes.
They've set a new benchmark even by their own standards, haven't
they? I didn't really know where to start with this because let's go back to stats again. Do you have the stats readily available, Phil?
I do.
Can you just read them to Tim?
Meters made is 700 to 400 in New Zealand's favour. But besides that, possession 49-51. Territory 48-52. Defenders beaten 20-24. Offloads 10-7 in France's favour. Tackles, New Zealand made 96-71 to France's 71. And they both missed around the 20 tackles.
Wow. You would not have predicted that score from those stats.
Well, no, that's the whole point. You can never predict any score from stats because you don't really know what they mean.
But having watched the game, it tells you that it demonstrates the difference in clinical finishing between New Zealand and France. Ultimately, on the face of it, they were similar, had similar amounts of possession and territory, similar defenders beaten. Actually, New Zealand made more tackles, but New Zealand were just so clinical. Every time they broke the line, the support was there, the offloads were there, and they finished it.
And I'd bubble that down to two very, very, very simple elements. One, New Zealand play territory better than anybody in world rugby. They kick quite a lot, but they make sure they get into the right areas first and then they play. And secondly, their skill set is unrivaled.
I think the skills are a big difference.
And that's what we were talking about in terms of Northern Hemisphere. I mean, it's not hard to identify what the difference is and why we have a semi-final full of Southern Hemisphere teams.
But do you know what
the really annoying
thing is, though? The thing which really gets my goat, I know the skills are good. I know, I've seen them and I was as impressed by anyone. But there are two teams in the Northern Hemisphere that should be banging down the doors time and time again. And it should be France and it should be England. And there's no excuse for either of these sides being the way that they are in this World Cup. It really, really gets to me.
Have you watched the Aviva Premiership? I love it. A gripping tournament. And again, we had some great... Our national team in England plays like the teams in the Aviva Premiership play. And in France, the national team plays like the teams in the top 14 play.
Yeah, because they're the sort of players available to them, I guess.
And that goes down to kids, right? You know, at the very grassroots level. It goes down to, in Australia and New Zealand, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, players get separated by weight in Australia. Whereas in England, it's separated by age and you get a whole year group. So inevitably, there's the one kid who grows early. He gets the ball, runs through and doesn't pass, just barges his way over. It's the same in Wales.
Yep. Well, a bit of exciting news about kids rugby in England. They've eliminated the knock-on.
Have they?
Yes, they have.
Get out of town.
No, they've eliminated the knock-on for, I'm not sure what age group, but it's to encourage passing.
Is it to like under fives or something really
low? It's like under tens.
I don't care. That's huge.
Which is exactly what I've been calling for a long time.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to old podcasts where JB's maverick, and I still want to see a senior game with no knock-on rules. And on the face of it, it seems ridiculous. But actually, when you think about it... Yeah.
Do you know what I think the danger is with my genius plan? I think the danger is that breakdowns get sloppy because players are so tired and there's more penalties. That's the big danger for me.
Well, no. What it would be is players would have to put greater emphasis on cardiovascular fitness, and so they would shed a few kgs.
It'd be very,
and then you wouldn't have these massive collisions that mean we're having these injuries that mean that we're getting these referee decisions, and it comes back round to what we were talking about at the start with the TMOs and all the rest of it.
It would look very peculiar, though, to see like 15 Paula Radcliffes play 15 Paula Radcliffes.
Well, it'd be, the physique would be more like rugby league. Where it's a more even in rugby league, you can't automatically look at someone and say, "Is he a prop? Is he a centre?"
Well, Rob Burrow would give it away.
Everyone would look like Sonny Bill Williams.
And what an
amazing proposition that is!
God, his shorts were short, weren't they?
He had some tiny shorts.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Love short shorts. He is a ridiculous specimen.
So what do we take of out of New Zealand going into the next round against... Who have they got? Is it Argentina?
No, South Africa.
South Africa. Do you know what that's... If they're going to struggle with a team, I guess it would be South Africa, but they've battered South Africa the last two times. They're going to the final, aren't they? There's no stopping them.
They can match them up front, and they can... Man for man, their outside backs aren't significantly better, but the way that they play, the skill set, the offload in the support lines, it's almost telepathic when they offload without looking and the next man is just there at full pace.
I know.
How do you stop that? Yeah. How can you possibly, if someone draws two defenders, offloads it blindly, and the next man is just sprinting onto the ball into the gap?
That's a culture of that's how playing with those skills, and like you say, it's the fact, and Argentina were the same, it's the fact that at that full pace they're able to execute, and that's I said it's another level, and I'd love to see a New Zealand Argentina final for that reason. That would be I'd hope it wouldn't be an arm wrestle, cagey arm wrestle like the last few World Cup finals. Really, it would be
I don't think that this one will. Well, I can't see it. I don't think.
Yeah.
Except for maybe South Africa or Argentina could be a cagey arm wrestle, but the other teams aren't built for it.
No.
They would just have to play.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely.
I think we should talk about that. I think we'll do a podcast once the teams come out and stuff.
Yes.
And we can preview the semi finals and the Premiership and all the rest of it later on in the week.
Agreed.
But just New Zealand, but just. But everything that we've seen from this New Zealand side in the last 10 years. I don't know if it's overemphasising it to say they stepped it up again to another level we've not seen before.
I would just temper that by saying France were very, very poor. Were very poor. Apart from, there's three players, I think, come out of it with any credit on the French side. I think Picamoles never gave up trying, carried like a hero. I thought Fofana made two or three very good breaks.
Fofana's okay, yeah.
And Spedding. The rest of them,
they just didn't know what they were doing. They were all at sea. Yeah, they were just all at sea,
and they didn't look bothered.
Right, what have we got? What have we got left to talk about on this podcast, though?
So we've got the Premiership. We've also got the Northern Hemisphere 15. If you want to do that,
yes. Robbie Fleck. That's the centre. Yes.
Robbie Fleck. Yes. I thought it was Devet Barry, but it's not. It's Robbie Fleck.
I mean, on any other weekend, we'd be raving about what a brilliant Premiership weekend this was. But we just haven't had the time and space. We will get to the Premiership a little bit. I was there at Bath, so I'll definitely.
How was that?
Oh yeah, well, I was reporting for BT Sport. So if you see the fella handing George Ford, he is a. Viva Premiership Man of the Match bottle of champagne in a pair of mustard slacks. That was me. So there you go. Anyway, we'll get on to that. But like you said, I think you're right, Phil. We should do our Northern Hemisphere team of the tournament, because when it was the end of the group stages and the Tier 2 teams were all eliminated, we did a Tier 2 team of the tournament. Now let's do a Northern Hemisphere team of the tournament.
Now, are you thinking there's going to be some overlap with the Tier 2 team?
I would have thought so.
Good. Good. That's good, because I was just wondering if you wanted to do just the Six Nations teams. But
No.
I'm happy with that.
So let's start at the front then, and props. There's not many English, Welsh props that did themselves any. I'm just going.
Well, not when it comes to scrummaging, no.
I'm just going to ignore both front rows pretty much in general.
Well, you're not going to put Francis in, though.
Tom Francis.
Yeah, they rate him.
What with his no carries, no tackles?
Yeah, maybe not then.
I think there's two in there for me. Eddie Benarous.
Yeah.
That's good.
And Masataka.
I was going to say the Japanese.
Mikami.
The Japanese prop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the Japanese hooker would be a contender.
Yeah, because
well.
His arrows were pretty straight throughout the whole tournament.
Yeah. Yes, very straight. I thought Ross Ford did very well as well.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we were saying, how the hell do you have a hooker who can neither hook nor throw?
Yeah, exactly. He's like the Scottish Dave Ward.
Is he not? Does he not have, like, we're talking about Sonny Bill Williams, does he not have one of the best physiques in rugby?
Yeah, he looks like it. I mean, I think he's got that far by just looking the part.
Yeah.
Do you know the guy who shows up to training? God, this guy's great.
Yeah, but after 94 Scotland caps, he's finally starting to play like an international rugby player as well.
Yeah. So go on, then we'll chuck Ross Ford in. Second rows.
Well, tight head.
Oh, yeah, tight, sorry.
What's his name from Georgia?
Kirikashvili.
Yeah.
Claremont.
He's in.
Yeah. WP Nell of Scotland. Oh, again. Yeah. He's very good.
He was a good anchor for them.
Yeah. Second rows.
Well, is he? I mean, obviously, I would go for Alan Wynn and I'd go for Charteris.
I think you have one of them.
One of them.
Not both of them, because there have been some other very good locks. Johnny Gray's been good.
Yeah.
Ian Henderson, I think, has been superb.
But not he hasn't had the three big games that the Welsh locks have had.
I'd go for Wynn Jones and Henderson.
All right.
All right, cool. Back row then.
You have to have Gorgodza in there.
Yeah, Gorgodza is a given. And
Warburton.
Warburton, probably. And then I'd say Denton definitely
deserves
a mention.
He was massive in that game today.
And Sean O'Brien's performance against France was absolutely exceptional. But he then didn't play. And had he been playing, he could have made a significant difference.
Yeah.
So all maybe right. Warburton, Denton and Gorgodza.
Done. Nine then.
I thought the Japanese nine was awesome. I can't remember his name.
Fumaki Tanaka.
Yeah, because everything relies on him getting there and moving that ball quickly.
So quickly. I thought Laidlaw was exceptional.
Yeah, Laidlaw was good, actually.
And he's one of the top point scorers in the tournament. And Gareth Davies as well. Scored some very important tries.
Yeah, he came out of nowhere. He was not even expecting to play.
Yes, exactly. So,
can we give it to Mike Phillips?
Did he play a single minute?
That isn't the point.
In some of the build-up, we saw the replay of his try against Ireland in that quarter-final in the last World Cup. We saw that in the build-up for games, so that was his involvement in the World Cup.
It was a good try as well.
Good team, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, real good team.
Yeah. All right, fly half.
Only one, and no one else even comes close as far as I'm concerned.
Bigger.
Correct.
Centres... Barrett and Burgess.
I'm going to sound horribly partisan, but I think it's got to be Roberts.
Hold on, what about the we've got Canada and the USA. We could pick in the Northern Hemisphere as well.
Yeah, we could pick them.
Canadian centre
DTH. Yeah,
DTH has been awesome.
Well, DTH on the wing. On the wing. Kieran Hearn has been good, but. I would probably go for...
You miss Cuddles, by the way, as one of your second
I mentioned him, but yeah. I think you two were both talking at the time.
Sorry,
I
Phil.
I always mention Jamie Cuddmore. Even if he's ineligible for the 15, he gets a mention.
And we're previewing the World Cup final. for me, it's got to be Roberts again.
I would have Henshaw in there as well.
I think Henshaw's been better than Roberts.
No.
I think he has as well. I think Roberts has been blunted because he's so one-dimensional.
Yeah, but I
he's
think...
He's also mocked out of every game.
But going back to it, and I'm not criticising what Wales can do and how effective it can be, but everyone knows what's coming.
Yep.
And nowadays, 5 years ago, Jamie Roberts's size and strength was a lot more effective than it is now when everybody's massive and everyone can stand up to that.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's the weapon.
And he's
not the weapon he was. Well, I think on the basis of what I've seen, Henshaw's been better.
Yeah, I would say so as well. You could have both of them. You could shift Henshaw to 13 because, I mean, JJ possibly, Bennett possibly.
Mm. Bennett played bloody well today.
Bennett is good.
And
then wingers?
Wingers, the only England player you'd maybe mention would be Watson.
Watson, yeah.
Watson's got a good show. It's definitely not the Welsh wingers.
What's happened to George North?
It's just not himself.
I thought that was his best game, but he's not been...
No. I mean, but he's not getting much ball either, to be fair.
He's not getting much ball. He has had a 6-month layoff leading into this, and I know they were wrapping him in cotton wool prior to the tournament.
I get scared every time he hits a ruck.
I do.
Don't touch him!
DTH has to get a mention.
Definitely.
As a winger for Canada, he's shown up really well.
Yeah.
Oh, and we should have mentioned also Finn Russell as a, honourable mention only.
For a 10.
Yeah. Hog at fullback, without a doubt.
Ahead of Goromaru?
I think Goromaru's...
Oh, can we move one of them onto the wing? Because Goromaru is actually the one I'd like to play.
Hog onto the wing.
Is that three Japanese players in our Northern Hemisphere team in the tournament?
At least three. Possibly four.
Yeah.
Goromaru at fullback.
Let's go Watson, just because he's in such a poor team, he's looked so good.
He has looked so good.
Going forward. DTH on the wing and Goromaru at 15.
Yeah.
Fine.
Honourable mentions for the rest.
Yes.
Right, Aviva Premiership then. What a weekend. Started on Friday night, and I've been a long standing fan of Dean Ryan.
You've stuck with him through thick and thin.
Yeah, you really have.
I've put up with so much stick over the years for saying I think Dean Ryan is a good coach. I think he's a good bloke, and I think he's a good leader of men. And the amount of stick I've got.
All credit to you, Tim. I mean, you waited 3 years to be right. No, hang on. 6 years if you count his Gloucester days.
You look at that Worcester team on paper and you did write them off last week. I think nobody thought they would.
I didn't think they'd beat Northampton.
No, I didn't. Northampton were blunt. They tried to do what South Africa and Wales try and do, really, which is we've got big guys, we can arm wrestle you and we'll win.
I thought Northampton were arrogant. That's what I thought. They came in there, they expected to win, and they showed nothing.
No, that's what I mean. I think they just thought they were just going to run over the top of them and out-muscle them.
One-out runners the whole time. Yeah. It was... Worcester at least tried to play some rugby. Mm. I thought Heathcote played really well, albeit he did miss three kicks in the second half. If he'd have got those, they would have been...
Donnacho Callaghan was awesome.
He might be a hell of a signing.
Dowson was outstanding.
It's good lead, and they're good leaders to get, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say Donnacho Callaghan's a bit of a risk because he is past it. But, you know, maybe you don't need him to win Heineken Cups. You just need him to stay in the Premiership.
Yeah.
So it's a big difference.
Half of it was Worcester did play better than expected. Half of it was Northampton were very disappointing.
Yeah.
That team on paper was excellent. And there's a lot of players there who... would want to put their hand up for England.
Foden, Dixon, obvious one.
Burrell, Big Luth.
That drop goal at the end was absolutely superb. It is exactly what they deserved.
Yeah, even though Worcester, even though they were the better team for most of it, they almost lost this game.
Mm.
It was only that drop goal, which was in the 81st minute of the match, that won it.
Let's go to the rec, because it's very, very similar. Bath should have lost that game. And I think it's a mark of a champion type team that you eke out those ugly wins. Exeter have never, ever won at the Rec, and they will not get a better chance. They should have finished Bath off with 20 to go.
Mm. Yeah. Are you allowed to give us any behind-the-scenes chat from BT Sport? What's it like there compared to, say, radio?
So I've done radio lots. TV, there's more people. People everywhere. It's buzzing. You have the canteen truck or whatever it's called, the food trucks and stuff that they all go and eat. I had breakfast at one of them. It was very nice.
Ooh. Yeah. Did you have a mirror with lights around it? Like big light bulbs?
No, but you sit on this production bus, and so it was Austin Healey and Sarah Elgan, or is it Sarah Easterby? Elgan Easterby. And Nick Kennedy, production team. So we sat and had our little meeting.
I don't think people realise the actual production value that goes into filming what seems so simple.
I mean, well, I think that's the point. It's like a good referee. You don't notice. When you don't notice all the little subtleties in it, then you know they're doing a good job. And yeah, there's so much behind the scenes. Anyway.
I was hoping that you'd come back from there, because it's like your first time working with BT, and there'd be like some sort of initiation or hazing, and maybe you come back with shaved hair.
Well, there was an incident with a pig. No, there really wasn't. Or maybe that's for another day. That's what I wanted to say about George Ford. So I sort of jokingly sort of said, oh yeah, I was the guy giving him the bottle of champagne and the mustard chinos, blah, blah, blah. But I mentioned it after England-Wales game, when there was the little huddle and they decided to go for touch.
Yeah.
And George Ford was right in the middle of it and looking like he was holding court. George Ford, in that post-match chat, had this sort of intensity in his eyes and said stuff with such conviction that I just thought, you're a leader. You are a leader. Now, I don't know if... I'm not saying Chris Robshaw won't be captain come the Six Nations, but I'm just going to put it out there. The next England captain, if it's not... whenever it's not Chris Robshaw, should be George Ford.
Hmm.
Well, he's got this burning intensity in him.
The papers keep mentioning Brown, but I didn't see that, really.
The problem... well, Brown is very good, but he's
good
a bit too fiery.
Be a good vice, a good leadership figure, but not a captain, per se.
Yeah. But Ford would be interesting. If Mike Ford goes to England, then he's a shoo-in.
There's not many international fly halves who are captains from memory. I mean, I can't remember many.
It's normally forwards.
Yeah, it's normally forwards. Like Johnny Wilkinson was captain. I'm not even sure he played a game.
Yeah, he was only a captain
on
when
paper.
Other people were injured.
No, he was actually official England captain.
Was he?
Yeah, he was. I'm not sure he played a single game as captain. He was named captain. So he's still at Newcastle. I think he got his kidney injury against Bristol.
When was that then? About 2005?
Yeah, I reckon it's straight after the World Cup. We'll need to look it up. I think it's straight after the World Cup.
Martin Johnson retired.
Martin Johnson retires. Johnny Wilkinson gets into a car crash, doesn't he, and does his shoulder. And then when he comes back eventually, he has like a severed kidney against Bristol. Something like that. I'm sure I'm missing out about... I'm sure I've got the years mixed up, the events mixed up. And
but he was at one point...
But he was official England captain.
England captain.
Yeah.
Dave Ewers, what a specimen. His legs have got even bigger.
He's a huge man, isn't he?
He's a huge man, and he works hard. I mean, he's got to be in the England squad. I mean, we wanted him in the England squad for the World Cup, but...
Yeah.
Well, instead of Sam Burgess. But there again, I thought they were picking Sam Burgess to play... Six.
Yeah.
So, but mind you, they probably do a similar job at centre too. It doesn't really matter, does it?
I think Burgess and Ewers should probably be in the England squad for the Six Nations.
If you're picking a 50-man, I just don't see how he didn't get into a 50-man squad.
But he's such a massive dominant physical specimen.
Yeah.
And he can offload. Yeah. You know, Ford's not a bad shout as England captain, but I'm not sure.
Interesting. Do you see who Saracen's captain was?
Hang on.
Itoji.
Maro Itoji was Saracen's captain at the weekend.
This bandwagon's going to keep on rolling until something bad happens. And I hope it's just not too much too soon for Itoji. Because everyone's talking about him. People have said he's going to be England captain. He might be one day.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
To be England captain, like, at the moment, it seems ridiculous.
When he's played half a season of Premiership rugby.
I know. But Saracen's dominant.
Yeah.
I suggested that Sale might catch Saracen's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. We're Sale away, though.
Yeah,
but they got absolutely battered.
Sale do this. They do go away and they do get hammered. At home, they're a different proposition because you literally can get no fans to the stadium. So it's like playing a training game.
and that was an accurate use of the word literally then.
Yeah.
You literally can get no fans to the stadium.
There is literally nobody, not a single person in that stadium.
Yeah, what kind of Saracens fan would want to drive up to the AJ Bell knowing you've got to be there 2 hours before kickoff?
We sometimes wonder the logic of anyone who lives in Manchester decides to drive to the AJ Bell.
I walk there from about a mile out. Anyway, you don't need to know my travel plans for Sale.
Just on Saracens as well, because Tim, you mentioned it last week, they're missing a lot of stars. And I countered by saying, but they know value. They get value players.
Yeah.
And you look at some of the players in this team, and you unless you're a real rugby nose, you've not heard of them.
No.
Rhys Gill, Michael Rhodes.
Oh, Rhys Gill, Wales International.
Yeah, but just.
I know.
Mike Ellery, Tim Strether.
Tim Strether from Nottingham in the Championship.
Petrus Duplessis
from Nottingham.
Titi Lamersitelli.
Yeah.
Heard of him.
Yeah.
Dave Parecki.
Yeah.
Big future.
And they put 40 points comfortably. Yeah.
They've got first team props that they got from Jersey. They've got centres from Nottingham in the Championship.
I've heard a rumour.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear my rumour?
is it going to?
It's come from a player.
Wild libelous. Oh no!
It's come from a player. Oh, here we go.
It's come from an actual player who doesn't play for Saracens.
Have you ever watched Newsroom?
I hate it with a passion.
I love that show, Newsroom.
I hate it so much.
Why do you hate it?
Everyone who works in the Newsroom is a horrible progressive. Like, they've done the episode... Let's not talk about Newsroom, yeah?
No. There was a point to me saying about Newsroom, because in Newsroom, they don't put anything on TV. Unlike a lot of... And the point is unlike a lot of news broadcasters who just go, let's put anything on that gets ratings, they won't put anything on unless they have two reliable sources.
That's what everyone does.
No, it's not.
So
you're going in with one well-placed source. Go on.
Correct, yeah.
Well, depending on what it is, I might be able to back this up because I might have heard it as well.
It's about Saracens
and
the money which they've been spending, which apparently is going to be drying up pretty soon because they've invested a lot of money there. They're not filling the stadium, and apparently it's not a particularly well-liked investment by the money men. So things could change there drastically. But that's just a rumour. It's just a rumour.
I'm glad you're stressing that.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's not particularly defamatory or anything, is it?
No, not really. Mm. Leicester beat London Irish. Now, we looked at Leicester's team sheet, talking about looking at team sheets, and it looked on paper awful. Or at least it looked... It looked unknown.
Yes. We knew some of the players, but they just were... Like, Balmain was playing, and I've never really seen him do much. Owen Williams was on the bench. Pierce started at 8.
They had the guy from the pizza from London Welsh, the flanker.
Fanua.
Lachlan McCaffrey.
McCaffrey.
There was a few quality players. like
Mulipola.
Mulipola, like Tom Croft back to fitness.
But their halfbacks were Sam Harrison and Tommy Bell.
I know.
Mm.
I know. And Saramai Bai at 37.
Yeah.
Wingers, George Catchpole and Adam Thompson.
He's no Miles Benjamin, is he? was Benjamin on the bench?
No, they had a young lad, Paolo Odogwu. I believe he scored a couple of scorching tries in pre-season.
Yeah, so a fairly unknown team, but they still managed to overcome London Irish.
Which doesn't bode well for London Irish. I think they could have problems ahead.
And London Irish, so they brought a new coaching team. They brought in Simon Simons,
yeah.
The former Chiefs lock, English qualified. Well, he's an Englishman.
Mm-hmm.
But again, looking at their team,
they
had closer to a full strength team than Leicester did, but it's not the best team. They're going to struggle a little bit this year.
You've got a bit of inside information here, because obviously, your brother plays there. What is the plan? Because they've obviously invested in Tom Coventry. They've bought his whole backroom staff over. They've even bought Coventry's captain over. And yet they haven't looked particularly good so far. Oh, and they're bringing over Franks.
Well, it's one game.
Yeah.
They're bringing over Franks. Yeah, that'll make a difference. I don't know.
But despite all that, you still think that they're going to struggle?
I'm not basing it on anything other than just that performance. I'm saying on the basis of that result against that Leicester team at home, I think it could be a long season for London Irish.
Yeah. They will. They're bringing Maitland in as well.
That's a good signing. They have made some pretty tasty signings, to be fair.
The one that London Welsh wanted, who would have made a big difference. London Irish wanted, was Andy Goud.
Mm.
That experience, that kicking game.
How can we not have talked about Andy Goud's hair? How have we got to this far into the podcast and we haven't discussed Andy Goud's hair?
Well, I don't know what you mean, Tim. I don't know why you want to be like that. Andy Goud's hair is perfectly natural.
I love it.
Perfectly normal, perfectly natural.
It's just perfectly normal, perfectly styled.
Perfectly normal, perfectly natural for his once bare scalp to suddenly be bearing very short hair. I don't mind it. And do you know what I like about it? He's obviously gone to the hair studio, the same one that did Austin Healey.
Allegedly.
He's just changed his hairstyle.
No, he hasn't mentioned it, but that's clearly what's happened, and I'm fine with it. I think that's great. But what I like about it is...
he's great. Ticking the box for Andy Goud. No, you'll be delighted by that.
He's not trying to hide it.
How would you hide it? Wear a hat?
until it's fully grown, until it's a mane,
one way you might hide it is by doing like a Wayne Rooney and having it all shaved off to the same length. Goud's got the same haircut he always had, but with his new hair growing through at a different length on the front.
It's not only a different length, it's a different colour.
I haven't actually seen this. I mean, I haven't seen it, and I'll tell you why I haven't seen it. Because when he's commentating, being a pundit, the information he's given me is so on point and so interesting. I see past the hairstyle. I see the man.
I think, Tim, I think your allegations are wildly inaccurate.
I think
the weight of not having to play competitive rugby week in, week out, not having to carry a full team on those huge shoulders. I think the stress, the relief of that means that he's under stress. He's no longer under stress. And his hair follicles are recovering.
Alopecia is a serious condition to people under stress.
As he no longer has to get up for training every day or play at weekends, he's got more time to enjoy Corona. And Corona has some magical...
Exactly.
It's like got Rogaine in it.
Tim, Andy Goud never got up for training.
Yeah.
You make a good point, Phil.
I think he looks absolutely fine.
And I think he looks fine.
What's the point of having hair plugs and shaving it off?
I think he looks fine. I think he looks great.
Agreed.
And finally, we should just quickly mention Quins. What a great result that was. You predicted Wasps by 20, was it, JB?
Quins by 20 is what I said.
Wasps by 20. I think I predicted Quins by 6 and they won by 5.
I predicted a Wasps win.
And Adam Jones and James Horwell made a big difference to their front five, apparently.
I don't know. I didn't see it. I will watch the rugby highlights later on this evening.
And I will also watch for a little bit of analysis on Rugby Tonight on BT Sport, which returns with a 2-hour World Cup special.
Oh, when?
Monday night.
What, tomorrow?
Or today, if you're listening to this on Monday.
And maybe this season is going to be Gloucester's year.
Oh, maybe it is.
To go away to Newcastle is it's a difficult place to go, and they comfortably won.
It's a difficult place to go, but probably one of the easiest places you will go.
Do you know what? Billy Twelve Trees equaled the record number of points in a single Premiership
Billy
game.
Billy Twelve Trees can play.
Record number of penalties, 9.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, he really can play. And I know he gets a lot of stick, but he does have these periods of, say, 6 months, and he looks great.
So maybe this year is Gloucester's year.
Maybe it is. Well, for the next 6 months.
We will return with a preview of the semi-finals and of the next weekend's Premiership, and we will have to start getting into the Pro 12, gentlemen.
Well, as soon as
do we have to?
If Ulster win a game, I'm all over it. If they lose,
I know what we'll do.
I'll just make an apology. If you're a Pro 12 fan hoping to hear some sort of review of the Pro 12 matches, we do respect me and Phil respect
absolutely
the Pro 12,
and I respect the Pro 12. I respect any league that can. That can keep up its consistent standards even when all of its players are missing in a World Cup. That's a real achievement.
It is. There's only so many hours in our weekend, and with the World Cup quarterfinals, that's 4 games. With the Aviva Premiership, that made it 6 live games.
In one
weekend. There's only so much we could do.
I'll tell you what we'll do when the season gets going. We will get on the phone when we sort it out. We'll get Brim Williams either live or on the phone, because all he does is watch Pro 12. He's a little bit weird in that way. And also CJ, who has been on the show and a friend of the show. Both of them are massive Pro 12 nerds.
CJ was actually at Edinburgh.
He goes to Edinburgh games.
Wow.
I think he was the one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think him and another guy meet up, don't they, every week and go to Edinburgh games. And then they go to some horrible bondage dungeon straight after for some more punishment.
Speaking of bondage dungeons, we're going to clear out of this room, JB, so you can get your tripod film back in and your big mirror.
Hey.
Right, so we will see you later. So when will we do that pod, do you reckon?
The teams won't be announced until Thursday, so we might not go out until Friday morning.
So Thursday night, Friday morning, we'll have...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The next podcast for you, previewing the weekend's action. Until then, in a bit, JB.
Goodbye, Tim.
Later, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
Bye.